From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Over the weekend, coverage of the government shutdown was intense. Most of the stories, as you watched them, focused on the politics and the behavior behind the scenes of the shutdown. But of course, we're also hearing about the impact to people's lives, too. Here's a question. Is it possible to hear a shutdown story objectively? Do you tend to go to news sources that reflect really only your own political opinion? We put this topic and these questions out to Barbara O'Connor late last week and Andy Jones. Dr. O'Connor is the Emeritus Professor of Communications from CSUS in Sacramento. Professor Jones is an English and Writing Professor at UC Davis. We often go to him for digital social media issues. Both are in the studio with me today, and you were both wide open for this conversation. So let me start. In general, do we seek news sources that match our opinions?
Oh, absolutely. And all of the academic data supports that. If you go to any Poynter study, which analyzes media, or you go to the Pew Research Center, overwhelmingly, we select media that support our own biases. And most people are not spending an inordinate amount of time like we do as academics looking at all media. They're going to their source, and that reinforces their own biases.
Andy, when you track Twitter, it's kind of a wide open field. So are people sometimes being influenced and shaping their opinions by a source like Twitter?
They are. As with other media, we tend to follow people who agree with us. And so, and many of them are thought leaders in politics or the media. And we look for insightful reasons why we are correct in our opinions. And that's one thing that we can turn to Twitter for.
So this category of coverage over the shutdown has been, in our experience here and everyone's experience, witness all the petitions that are circulating, a different level of communicating. There's an extreme sensitivity to every word that's chosen and the way we combine those words. Why is this one different? Andy, do you want to start?
I'd say one reason is that there are a certain number of metaphors, certain ways of speaking about a particular topic that you find on the right or the left. And it's almost as if all of us are getting talking points, and we learn certain ways to think about a particular subject. And then when we come across someone in the media who presents it, thinks about it differently, it immediately grates on us. And so I think that's one reason why we're so sensitive, because of the different ways that language has been used to really guide our thinking on these important, hot political topics.
I want you to answer the same question, Barbara, but Andy also referred to the fact that we're hearing things through our filter. So sometimes maybe we're not hearing as objectively, but let's get back to the sensitivity.
Well, I think it's been going on for so long. You know, if you track public opinion and trust of elected officials, it's been in the toilet for the last 2 years. And so it's a drumbeat. I mean, it keeps going on and on and on. And media coverage of the dysfunction is really very now histrionic. And, you know, people are trying to be illustrative of what it means to you because it's getting closer to the deadlines. It's often helpful to look back at history and know that this happened over Medicare. It happened over Social Security. Government shutdowns occurred over both of those social programs, as your NPR story said prior to our coming on. But most people don't know that. And so they hate. I mean, we are now at a visceral level of hate. And you don't often think logically when you're that emotionally invested. And so anything that violates the way you think is more of the same. And I think the media is catching a lot of flack, some of it deserved in some media properties. But people are really angry. And when you're angry, you don't listen as clearly.
I'm looking at two of what our senior producer, Jen, said she found 100 petitions out there circulating, this one going to Turner Broadcasting, asking the news anchors, personalities, and guests to stop saying Obama, say President Obama, and respect. I mean, for that to get to petition level is an extreme sensitivity. Even though we do hear that, people want the respect regardless of the issue. Another to NBC asking that David Gregory be fired or removed from Meet the Press because there's a difference in the questions that are asked. This is different scrutiny, isn't it, Barbara?
Well, it is. And that goes back to the kind of visceral anger and insecurity. I mean, if you listened yesterday to any of the Talking Head programs, You have the Secretary of the Treasury saying this is going to be the biggest fiscal cliff we've ever crossed, and that all of our assets will be at risk, and it's going to make the recession look like a walk in the park. I mean, people are frightened. They're coming out of an economic downturn. In many cases, like your guest last week, their personal health is at issue. I happened to be in Atlanta last week when they shut down the CDC, and the Atlanta media did the same thing. What, you know, the personal stories and what it means to not have flu shots or tracking epidemics. You look at the NASA shutdowns, and you've got a spaceship out there with nobody to support it. Mm-hmm. So people are really, I think, worried. And anything that touches that worry becomes very irrational, and it's very personal.
You mentioned our story last week. Go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say that one of the reasons I think it becomes more irrational is that the gerrymandering in districts all across the country is so intense now that we have a great number of what are called landslide districts, where individual representatives are beholden to a more extreme version of their constituents, either more progressive or leftist or more conservative. And as a result, when there are these differences, these nuances in the nationwide conversation, there is much more interest in appealing to the more radical portion of one's constituents rather than to try to take nuanced positions. And as a result, people are hearing at home not only media that agree with them, but also their representatives that agree with them. Well, and so there's less compulsion to try to come to these more sophisticated understandings that are necessary for political progress.
And if what you're saying is true, then that middle group is feeling even less heard. Their voice has less amplification out into Washington.
And often what
that's absolutely
those,
true.
Yeah, and often what these people are doing, the sociologists call it the great sort, where people are actually moving to areas of the country where there are more people like them. And so that, for instance, many progressive or liberal people will move to California. People who are more conservative might move to Texas or to the South and find these pockets of people who really agree with them and representatives who agree with them. And so obviously it makes the whole country more polarized. It's something that's not only happening in the media, but these are choices that many of us are making individually.
That's Andy Jones from UC Davis. We're also talking with Dr. Barbara O'Connor, Professor Emeritus from Sac State. We're talking about the journalism of covering shutdown stories. And this came up for us because of, Barbara, you referred to it, the story we did last week with the young mom, Michelle, from Auburn, who is among those whose clinical trial is going to be or is now put on hold because of the shutdown. On that particular day, the Republicans had moved a bill that might restore the funding. And as we talked about that, just the discussion seemed to insert a tone or a bias into the conversation. And we heard from listeners that felt extremely offended with the politics in there, even though the majority of the story was about Michelle's case. And the fact that I didn't respond or raise, kind of stand up for the politics that got inserted into the story. So it prompted a real big discussion. I've explained the situation to you. Will you give me your feedback in general terms?
I mean, typically, the way you illustrate a larger story in any media property is to talk about it, how it affects individuals. And that's deeply personal, no matter what the topic is. So the interview that you did was her feelings about her case, and that's an example. And, you know, we teach journalists to always try to provide an example that's smaller that people can relate to. In this case, you know, you were doing that. You were doing what journalists are taught to do. And in the middle of the story, she made a reference and put some blame on her own personal case. You really didn't have either the time at the moment, and you don't want to do it to a person who's feeling very deeply about their own personal case. So I think journalists are trying to cope with, how do I then make it more fair? Do I provide another case on the other side, or do I do a wrap that does an objective statement of where the facts are? Often the time constraints of a live program don't allow that to occur immediately. You know, so you may have to go back and wrap it later, just at a fundamental level of journalism.
It is much different to push back against someone whose wedding just got canceled compared to someone
right.
whose life is on the line.
Right.
And that's just a human response.
It is. And I think, you know, we used to forgive that and understand it as a culture. And because of the raw nature of our own emotions and our own feelings about what's going on, we are less forgiving generally.
Well, and one listener wrote about it and said, of course, we have empathy for a person with cancer that touches all of us. But is her health more important than all the other people who might not have health care in the bigger issue? And I think the only thing that I can say is, as humans, we are trying to walk and learning about the sensitivity, walk carefully through how to tell these stories, and in some cases be political when it's appropriate and not be political in others.
We often have to figure out what is the symbolic meaning of this particular story. And we balance that with the individual concerns that someone would express. And so when you look at an individual, of course, you show empathy and you give an individual an opportunity to tell her story. But then many people are thinking not only of that one person, but as that letter suggests, of the symbolic nature of this person, that when she says something about, for instance, Democrats blocking funding for the NIH, well, that's in a larger context. NPR, of course, does a very good job of providing that context over and over again so that its listeners can be more thoughtful on these topics. But as Barbara suggests, you don't want to immediately provide a large political context to a heartfelt assertion that a cancer patient has made. So you have to figure out, well, what is that particular balance? Someone just tuning in at only that moment might hear that portion of a show and say, well, what's going on over there at Insight that these radical political statements are being offered
right,
and are not
right.
being challenged?
And they're not being corrected.
Right.
I mean, you learn from those experiences. I learned
That's
from
so
them
true.
Over the years. And
mm-hmm.
I resolved it, and we did this during the Vietnam War. You know, there are lots of historic examples where you try to insert an individual story. And what you do is, what I learned to do is say at the outset, this is a bigger story. You know, these are the issues. I'd like to focus on one side of it today.
Mm-hmm. And then you try to keep it,
keep it very narrow
like that.
Yeah.
And that's what happened on that day. You're telling a narrow story. The Republicans had moved a bill. Because they did that, it gives the perception that they are being good guys on that day, a certain type of group, which doesn't take the bigger
right.
picture into context.
And journalists are people, too.
Yeah.
And we know that different political players will try to manipulate the way that media responds. So, for instance, on that particular day, a number of Republican members of the House of Representatives came out in white lab coats, suggesting that they were representing the interests of doctors and medical professionals, and that those who disagreed with them did not care about science, medicine, cancer patients, etc. And so that's a media stunt to a certain extent.
Right.
And so we as viewers, as listeners, we need to look at that and see that in a larger context and not immediately be convinced by such a stunt, that we need to have a more balanced and thoughtful approach.
I was very glad the listeners wrote in, because it prompted a very good conversation for us here. And in that case, I do think we goofed in not being able to keep the personal story as narrow as it was. But more than anything, it opened our eyes to the cautiousness that we have to walk through this. Andy, in fact, you're doing it right now because you're speaking one step removed from the closeness of this issue, and yet I know it's affecting your personal life. So you're wearing both hats, if you would share.
Absolutely. My son, Juki, has a rare metabolic syndrome called Smith-Lemli-Opitz, and he's seen by the NIH. We go about once a year, and he's seen by a whole, a series of doctors, specialists in his rare syndrome, but also he's seen by eye doctors, ear doctors, behavioral specialists. And it's just wonderful, the intense care that we get largely for free, including them putting us up at the Children's Inn across the street from the main clinic. So this affects us, but because we're in a cycle of going to the NIH about once a year, rather than are depending upon an immediate trial to get started, we have a little bit more distance or a little bit more perspective. But it does affect us directly. I mean, I think about the incredible work of all of those researchers and doctors who we've interacted with, and to think that those clinics, that those hospital rooms, that those labs, that those are all dark now, you know, that's really tragic. And not just for my son, Juki, but for
everyone.
In the way that Juki is symbolic for a great number of people who have these obscure or strange syndromes and who deserve the support of the best medical researchers in the world and also of a government that can support
them. But on the other
them.
Side, you know, we rolled out the Health Care Act last week. Mm-hmm. And I, as most people know, I'm on the National Board of AARP. And so our illustrations were, how does that affect you and what will be delayed and how does it impact Medicare? And so I think as a journalist, you have to say all of these are intersecting circles and you do the best you can to explain, you know, the politics of it and the personal side of it. And that's what you were doing. And
well,
NPR does that very well.
Well, I think it's a worthy discussion because in some ways in media, in our world, if you have a blog, if you tweet, whatever you do, you're practicing journalism.
You are.
Right.
So thinking about what message you're putting out, how you're putting it out, and the context it might be heard in is always a good exercise.
It is, and it's a learning exercise, too,
yeah.
for all of us.
Amen.
And I say that's an important balance, too, often this oversimplified, bifurcated thinking of right and left that we often see in the media, because often it's easier to present something as a catfight rather than to look at the nuance. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what causes the problem.
Well, with the debt ceiling deadline coming up and this week of intensity, this is, I think, only going to crank up a little tighter over
Absolutely.
The next couple days. So thank you so much. It's good to pause and reflect on what we do and how we do it.
Thank you, Beth.
Thanks for having us.
It's always nice to work with you both. That is Dr. Barbara O'Connor, Professor Emeritus from Sac State, and Professor Andy Jones from UC Davis. There's more online at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, Amy Quinton's Delta Immersion Series.